Welcome to Season 2 of Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with experts in disability about their journey, life, and inspiration.
I'm Sam Prue.
And I'm Nikki Nolan.
Let's get started.
Hi. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Howdy, I'm Mila Evans, a native Texan from Plano, Texas. I have shorter-length curly brown hair and a Russia, bluish Russia that says progress over perfection with the accessibility icon in the air. I am a self-employed speaker, trainer, and accessibility marketing consultant who educates companies and their employees about disability and accessibility. I was born profoundly deaf, and that came with this accent. It's not a British accent, I wish. Anyway, I grew up learning how to speak in the braid. The most common assumption people make about me is that I know sign language. I don't. That's not a good or bad thing. It just is. It's what works in my life. And I respect everyone's communication choices.
We would love to know, what lights a fire in you? What gets you up in the morning?
What lights a fire in me is educating people in a kinder way. That's what progress over perfection is about. Accessibility supporters are passionate. They can get a little over jealous. I can't tell you how many times people have jumped on me for something because I accidentally forgot to add an image description or I used language they didn't like. This really happened. When we talk about hearing disabilities, we usually say deaf or hard of hearing. Hearing impaired has kind of fallen out of favor because people don't like the term impaired. Well, some folk identify as hearing impaired. When I mentioned someone was hearing impaired, someone else got upset. I gently educated them and said, this is how the person self-identifies. In another scenario, someone wrote a speech and I saw a copy of that speech that mentioned me and referred me to me as a deaf person. But when they gave the speech, they changed it to hearing impaired. It's as if they were afraid to say the word deaf. Disabled, disability, and deaf are not bad words to avoid. So I am trying to create a mindset of listening and educating rather than lecturing or berating. A lot of us disabled people don't like the term special needs. When I did a post on that, a couple of people with disabilities said that they prefer that. So we have to respect their decision. So next time someone says something we don't like, let's chat about it with education in mind. Progress over perfection also helps people new to accessibility. They feel overwhelmed. I tell them not to worry about it. Don't worry about getting it all done or perfect. Every step helps, no matter how small.
So communicating in ways that respect everyone can be a real struggle. And it's something we think about at Fable, especially on social media. You do a lot of work on social media. How do you balance being impactful and yet communicating with nuance?
Wonderful question, Sam. Thank you. So that's why I take an approach like I am a student teaching what I'm learning. I like to think of myself as a student rather than a teacher because I'm always learning something every day and I don't know it all. I would never know it all. I still get flustered at times, even though I've been working in this space for a while. I learn something all the time and language changes so quickly. So I try to be transparent and ask people or say, I'm sharing this because, or I hear this. I don't know if this is actually what's happening. What do y'all think? Or the other day, I wrote a post about neurodivergence and I just finished a project that was like, so it mentioned hearing disability, visual disability, mobility disability. And then I'm like, what did I do for that math category? Not speech disabilities, but the things that affect like autism, ADHD, those things. I needed one word for all of that. And I felt like no matter what I do, I'm going to offend somebody. So thank you. Thanks for the conversation we had. It was great. Nobody was pointing fingers. Nobody was yelling. Nobody was being nasty. It was the kind of conversation we should be having as humans, just respectful. So in the end, I put for people who identify as, and that's how I worked around it.
What are some of the key moments that led you here?
I've been self-employed in 2005. Around 2018, business slowed down. A longtime client had been encouraging me to jump into video. I am a marketing professional, and I know the value of video. I wasn't shy about speaking or appearing in video. However, one thing I was is realistic. I knew I had an accent that hailed from nowhere accessible by travel. I wasn't sure how people would respond to my accent. So I made a 20-second video asking a question. That's it. I captioned it. The response was tremendous. So I started making videos mostly about marketing. Then marketing services was my core business. And making these videos, I learned how to caption them. So I have been watching captions for many decades now, but doing the actual captioning was a different story. So in learning how to caption my own videos, I started making videos of why adding caption is only part of the equation for a high quality accessible caption. Fast forward to 2019, the team at Nobility Access U invited me to present on caption at the accessibility conference. When I got there, I felt like I had finally found my passion, the thing that lights my fire. My ikigai, which means life purpose in Japanese, so I'm sure I'm not saying it right, so I apologize to the Japanese speakers. I knew I wanted a career in accessibility, but I wasn't sure how or what. The founder of an accessibility consultancy saw my post on LinkedIn and brought me on as a marketer. That was the big step towards accessibility. Then someone who saw me speak at ActSU invited me to speak at her meetup. The speaking invitation snowballed from there to TEDx, as well as paid speaking engagement. Her invitation to me to speak, followed by many others, told me that my acting did not matter. It was about what I shared. In accessibility, I decided to study for the International Association of Accessibility Professionals, IAAP for sure, thankfully. Certified Professional in Accessibility and Core Competencies, CPAC for short, exam. So, IAAP certification exam for accessibility. And by some miracle, I passed. It was important to me to earn this certification to show I have knowledge about accessibility that goes beyond my own disability. I care about equal access for everyone.
So as a person with a disability, what was the CPAC process like for you? Did you find it tricky? Was the content useful?
Oh my goodness, it was a month long, many months. It took me many months to study for, I think about 8 months. And it was overwhelming. I am not the greatest test taker in the world, far from it. I have a very embarrassing SAT scores that unfortunately doesn't disappear from my memory for some reason. Anyway, so I struggled with standardized type tests. And I took multiple courses. I've studied, I wrote about it, I've talked about it, and it got so bad that the day before I took the test, I started dreaming about it. It was exhausting. Anyway, yes, the content was very useful. One of the biggest things I have come to understand are the different types of disability model, like social model of disability, the medical model. When I first started studying for it, I didn't get it. I didn't understand what it meant. I didn't understand why it mattered. I mean, life happened. No, why do we need these models? So it helped me understand things like that a lot better. And what was frustrating was I wanted to know this material. I wasn't studying for just a certification. I wanted to know it. And it just was a lot of hard work. But anyway, it paid off.
How long did you work in accessibility before taking the test? Because I went to one of their informational things, and I just didn't completely understand how long you have to work in accessibility. Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so IAAP offers multiple certifications, and there's another one called WAS, Web Accessibility Specialist, and it is the technical certification. I don't think I'll ever go for it because I don't get along with forms and ARIA. I can't make sense of ARIA, which is the accessibility that helps make forms more accessible. Anyway, so that certification requires you work in accessibility. The CPAC does not. There's no time requirement that I can recall. It's more general, which is what I like. I want to be on the education side of things, not the web development side of things.
What experiences have shaped your perspective around disability?
My writing and speaking about disabilities has led to paid speaking opportunities at companies and organizations. After every speech, I get a message from at least one attendee who said the speech compelled them to act, to make a change, to make progress. So when I speak, I have three goals in mind, and those are educate, entertain, and encourage action. So far, so good. It's working.
Yes. You inspired me around captions, and I shared that with someone who was working on captions at my company.
I wanted to follow up when we're talking about your work in the accessibility space. You and I think, both hear from a lot of people who are people with disabilities who want to get into this work and who want to do what we do. And I'm interested, what advice would you give to people with disabilities who want to do this?
I just hosted a meetup that was talking about breaking into digital accessibility careers with 811 New York City. And it was a part two, by the way. So in part one, it was with Louise Clark. And I commend her. She came up with a nice plan. So one of the first things I recommend is studying materials. Sorry, like watching movies, reading books, watching TV shows with people with disabilities or about people with disabilities. I mean, famous one is Quit Camp on Netflix. That's an excellent one to watch because it's about trying to make change and with the law. And what the people with disabilities did to affect that change. So it was really amazing and inspiring, but in a good way, not inspiration porn. We know we don't like inspiration porn. The other thing, it works, of course, because you want to get outside of your own disability. I mean, I can only share my own experience. As we all have said at one point or another, when you've met one person with a disability, you've met one person with a disability, not all of us. Same thing if it's a deaf or if it's a blind, even with the same category. So that was reading and reading articles, lots of great resources online, have great articles. Get involved in the community. You can do that in your favorite social network. For example, if you love LinkedIn, start following the people who talk about the topics on LinkedIn. If you like Slack, so if you like Facebook, there are Facebook groups. So that's where I will start.
Can you explain, use this word inspiration porn, and we hear it a lot, and I don't know if everybody understands what inspiration porn is. Can you just explain what that is?
You bet. So the most famous instance of inspiration porn is Stella Young TED Talk. Stella Young is a woman who was in a wheelchair, and she, her famous TED Talk, I'll never forget the title, it's brilliant. I am not your inspiration. So you can look that up on TED. It's very easy to find. Unfortunately, she's not with us anymore, and we all talk about her all this time later. Her point was, she was sharing a story about how she got an award for doing nothing. You know, she said for being in a wheelchair or whatever, her disability. Yeah. So, inspiration porn, it took me a while to understand what it is, because there are people with disabilities who've done amazing things that are definitely inspiring. But the trick is, if the inspirational story make the reader feel good about themselves, or does it make the person with disability rather than the person reading it? So, for example, a lot of people say, he's in a wheelchair, he managed to run a marathon, what's your excuse? So they're using him to inspire somebody who doesn't have a disability to achieve it. So that is inspiration porn. But if you say he loves to run, he works so hard, he worked with a trainer, he did this, he did that, and he realized the goal of completing a marathon, the focus is on the disabled, that's not a considered inspiration porn.
Thank you.
So you and I often find ourselves speaking to organizations, but sometimes as people with disabilities, organizations can pressure us to speak for the disabled community. Do you ever have to push that against that? And if so, how? Because we need to support each other and work together as people with disabilities, but we shouldn't ever speak for one another. And sometimes that can be a tricky balance to strike.
Absolutely. That's an important thing we all need to talk about. And thank you for bringing that up. So I've been fortunate that nobody ever come to me and said, oh, we want you to be the representative for the disability. But I've never had that happen with a thing. I am representing all of us, which is, yeah, a little daunting to think about. But if that were to happen, you know, I would use my same spiel. You've met one deaf person, you've met one deaf person. If you meet one disabled person, you've met one disabled person. We're all, if every disability category, you will rarely ever find two people who are exactly alike. Just for the deaf alone, you may be born deaf, you may become late deafened, or you may be born hard of hearing, which is different from deafness. Deafness is a bigger hearing loss than hard of hearing. You may have had hearing aids from the day you were a toddler, or maybe you got them later, or maybe you had neither and got a cochlear implant later. You might have learned to lip-read, or you may not have. You might have learned sign language, or you may not have. Or you might have learned sign language younger or later. There's so many possibilities. So that's why I encourage when organizations bring on speakers, well, it depends on their purpose, of course. So if they're trying to raise disability and accessibility awareness, then you want to find a qualified speaker, not just somebody. Unfortunately, there are people with disabilities making lots of money sharing wrong information. And yeah, it's a real problem. I mean, some of the things they've said about, I know that there's about deaf people, that hard of hearing people can hear, they don't need captions. I'm not capturing this right, so nix that. But it's misinformation. Yeah, it's misinformation. Yeah. And so that's why companies need to do their research before they bring on a speaker. So speakers usually have clips, and you can ask the community. You can usually find it under hashtag accessibility and hashtag A11Y, which is short, a numeral, I don't know if I pronounced that right. So the 11 letters between A and Y, that's where A11Y comes from. And it's funny because it only saves you one syllable over accessibility.
So I'm really curious. I hear you say this frequently when you meet one deaf person, you've met one deaf person, or when you meet a person with a disability, you met one person with a disability. So I'm curious, where did that come from?
It comes up a lot. I mean, I see people in the disability community say it all the time. In fact, I caught a TikTok. They said the same thing. I have said there's a man mini talk. I've heard friends say it. So I don't know who came up with that. You know, it's just one of those things that a lot of us know about, a lot of people with disabilities know. And plus, it's our own experience, because we have a tendency to somehow meet other people with disabilities similar to ours. For example, when I was growing up, my mom knew another family in the city with a deaf daughter who was like a year older than me. So they introduced us. I mean, we didn't become friends or anything. Our lives were pretty different. But that's my point. There are situations that will bring you together. For example, my deaf BFF started an article about me in the newspaper. She lived in my city. And she sent me a message out of the blue. And she said, I hope you don't think I'm bananas or something. Or a stalker. Yeah. She was drawn to me because of my deaf background. We're both deaf. And of course, we have very different backgrounds, even though we're both all deaf people. So that's how you, so when you met other deaf people like you, you see the common things you have in common. You see the things you don't have in common based on your experiences. So it's experience that we're not all going to be the same. I don't think I've ever met anyone with the same exact story I have. I mean, I've met other people who had a hearing aid, grew up raw, were born deaf. But the one person I'm thinking of right now, when she was in her late 20s, I think she went back to school to get it out, and she started learning sign. So she became fluent in ASL. I haven't done that yet. So there's a difference right there.
I mean, what you just said there about difference is so interesting and something that people really don't understand. I mean, you probably get a lot of pressure to go and learn sign language the same way everyone else thinks I should have a guide dog, which I should not have a dog. There's reasons for that. But do you sometimes find yourself resistant to things that maybe would be helpful because you don't want to conform to the stereotype? It's something that I struggle with. It's why I don't play music, because there's this stereotype that all blind people are musical. And so I kind of limited myself in that way. Do you find that ever happens to you?
Very intriguing. I've gotten to the point where if somebody starts signing to me, I start to feel bad, because I feel like they're excited. They've met a deaf person and they're hoping that I will do sign language back with them. So I feel like I'm disappointing people. Yeah, not that. It's a full language just like Spanish and French. It has its own syntax. It is not English on the hand, as so many people don't realize. And I have, over the years, gotten pressure why don't you learn American Sign Language? It's our language. We should know that we're facing women because I'm a speaker who was hearing aids. But I don't see that as much anymore, but I did when I was younger. They treated me differently because I was not a good person, and that's really hard. And that's why at the beginning of our conversation, I said I respect people's communication choices. Everybody should do what works for them. And guess what? People think deaf people don't like music. Well, I love musicals very much. I grew up on musicals. I'm passionate about musicals. And before I could see a musical, I'll read up on it, try to learn the song. That's why I'm never going to see Hamilton in person unless the caption, because I cannot memorize that show.
I have to ask, what's your favorite musical?
Oh, gosh. I would say Company by Stephen Sondheim. Yeah. That and Chorus Line, I think. Oh,
that's nice. Is it because of the subject matter or is it the dance? Or what draws you to a musical? I'm interested. I also like musicals and have a very different answer.
Okay. I would love to know your answer.
My favorite musical is probably a tie between either Annie or Les Miserables, because I like the subject matter of both of them so much. And I like some of the songs, are the way the melody and the lyrics interact are so powerful to me. But I have no idea what any of the dancing or costuming is like, and I don't care.
Interesting. My favorite is Cabaret.
Oh, but awesome. So, Sam, while you were drawing out what you liked, my hands were making drum motion and drum roll. So, you said name the drum. What was the other one? I missed it.
Annie? Yeah. Tomorrow is one of the most optimistic songs ever written.
Yeah.
And maybe is probably one of the saddest in kind of its simplicity.
I wasn't laughing at the fact you liked Annie. It was just so different from Les Miserables. That was my confusion. I'm like, Les Miserables and Annie, that doesn't sound
right. It's about struggle, though. If you think about it, they're both about like struggle and overcoming and empowerment, you know.
And they're both embodiments of a very particular emotion, right? They take one emotion, and that's really the central piece of the show. I don't like shows that want me to feel 9 different ways at once in a musical.
Well, you and my spouse share that in common. He loves Les Miserables. He was listening to it over and over and over in the car, and I was just like, I'm tired of this. It is so good. It's just too much for me. It's a great show for you because there's not a lot of activities to watch. They don't do any dancing at all. Maybe a little bit of The Innkeeper does a little bit, and that's my favorite because he makes me laugh. Yeah, but it's just really long, and there's a lot of lyrics. Not as bad as Hamilton, but a lot of lyrics. I guess the shows I like, well, there's not a whole lot. Company, the songs are just so good. The main song, Company, is wonderful, and it's Sondheim. I love Stephen Sondheim. I also like Stephen Sondheim, Assassin, which sounds really dark, and I usually don't like dark, but it's brilliant because the songs are so good. What he does is, for all the murders, the presidential murders, the song reflected the time period. So when John Wilkes Booth killed Lincoln, the music from there was the ballad style, which was the common style back then. And with the 1780s with Rome, Squeaky Rome, and John, who shot Reagan. It was more the hippie 1780s music. Yeah, so they reflected the period, and it was just really, really good. though I appreciate songs that are easy to learn, though I love Anything Goes and Sound of Music for that. Simple, easy to follow, and I love Chorus Line for the dancing and the amazing lyrics as well.
Do they do live captions in musicals? And if so, does it work? I ask because audio descriptions in a musical, sometimes it doesn't work, right? Because they want to describe what's happening and you just want to listen to the music. And so I just wondered, have you watched captioned musicals and do captions work well in that art form?
Okay, so I am going to New York next month and it's my hope I will finally experience the musical with captions, which I have not. And in fact, I have done a lot of reading on it. I know some people who have, and one had a good experience, one did not. The caption just kept getting out of
sync.
Yes, thing was stopping. And then another one made news. It wasn't somebody I know, but she went to see a musical in New York City with the caption, and the actor stopped and called her out. I actually had that fear of that happening because it looks like you're recording or taking pictures when you're holding the device in your hand and watching. So it looks like you're filming. And that was a heartbreaking video that person made, sharing her experience of how the actor called her out. And I could feel it. I could feel her pain because I can see that happening. So it's my hope. I'll go to run and I will be proactive in asking the staff, do your actors know about this?
Yeah. Well, let me know how it goes. I hope it works out well for you. Wow. We're now just, this is the Musicals and Disability Podcast. I better give it back to Nikki to bring us back on track.
And now a really quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Hello, my name's Sam. I'm a full-time magnification user and a member of Fable's community of accessibility testers. If you're listening to this podcast, you already know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your product development journey. Fable can help you do that, from improving your team's accessibility training with Fable Upskill to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage. We can help you take the next step in building amazing websites and apps that are accessible and easy to use for everyone. To learn more, check out what we do at www.makeitfable.com and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
And we're back. Let's get into this.
You've been doing this for quite some time now. And you've been doing an incredible job, if I say so. But what are some of the things that you've learned or experienced that have surprised you?
So I have a mental health disability. I was never shy in talking about it with friends and family, but I never talked about it in a public forum like LinkedIn. Why? Because it was hard enough being a disabled, self-employed business owner. Add mental health on top of that, that sounds like a recipe for going out of business. So, well, when people started posting their mental health stories on LinkedIn, I would thank them for sharing and for chipping away at the stigma that should not be a stigma. I realized that if I want to see change, then I have to do my part. So I shared my mental health story and people were wonderful about it. Now I'm talking about it more. My disability definitely played a big role in my mental health disability. That's an example of why intersectionality matters. Deafness and mental health do not exist in vacuum. They affect each other. Of course, race plays a big part of it for other people. I mean, a person who is deaf and Black is going to have a whole different experience than me as a white person will.
So it sounds like you were surprised that when you started opening up about that, that your business didn't go away.
Suffer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was scared of, I was worried about that. But one thing, I completed a leadership program that was just amazing for me. And being a leader, I think, means being transparent, being compassionate, being vulnerable. And so that was my, that's what pushed me into talking about it. Being that leadership program is partly why I decided to finally talk about it publicly.
Yeah. What kind of community have you sort of created and discovered during this journey?
I discovered community in many places, including social media, virtual meetups, and the nonprofits I'm working with. These communities focus on accessibility, disability advocacy, and growing leaders who are intentional about inclusion. Too many companies only focus on diversity and not inclusion. They bring in people with disabilities to their company like a checkbox, but they don't give them the tools to thrive or have a voice at the table. That's not inclusion. This is diversity and checking off a box. I receive messages all the time from people who share their stories with me saying, I got this job, I was excited, I have a disability, but I feel alone. I don't have what I need to be supported. Those are the kinds of stories I'm still getting from people. I guess they saw me on LinkedIn and they wanted to share their story. So there's a lot of work and education to be done, and I'm doing my best to help that.
For people who maybe aren't on board yet with inclusion and accessibility, what do you find is the most effective way to inspire people and to educate people and to get people actually interested in doing accessibility? And it's so interesting because everyone's answer to this is different.
I use the curb cut explanation. That one seems to be the most powerful. Because, for example, 80% of the people who use caption are not deaf or hard of hearing. And I try to tell the people to think about the time, how many times they've gone on elevators, how many times they've gone on use ramp instead of a step. I mean, I tell the story of how when my kids were little, I would put them in a stroller and sometimes there was not a ramp. So what do I have to do? I don't want to go down the step and my baby fall and splat their face. I would feel like a bad parent, right? So what do? I turn the stroller around so my back is to the street and carefully step down the curb while pulling my child down. That way they're leaning into the stroller and not falling out of the stroller. So a lot of parents can relate to that, and a lot of parents are leaders, executives. So hopefully stories like that. Travelers, they want to pull the luggage without going down the steps. Shopping carts, same thing. So the curb cut effect seems to be one of the most powerful ways. Another way I try to encourage companies to invest in accessibility is to tell them that people with disabilities are as big as China, and that's the largest country. And we all together with our friends and family, we have $13 trillion of disposable income. We're ready to spend it on businesses that are accessible. Now, $13 trillion, how much is $13 trillion? A lot of us can't fathom just how much that is. That's huge. I can barely envision a million, much less a billion. How can I even think what a trillion is? So I did a little research because I wanted to find an analogy for $13 trillion, okay? So I found one. If everything American in the United States had enough money to buy 13,000 basket of cookies. So, Nikki, you will have enough money to buy 13,000 cookies. Sam, you have enough money to buy 13,000 boxes of cookies. I will too. That's what 13 trillion means. If every single person living in the United States would have enough money to buy 13,000 boxes of cookies. That's how big the disability market is.
Wow. And where did this number come from, this $13 trillion?
The return on disability report.
Cool. We'll link that in the show notes. Yeah, because that's an important statistic. And so if you've inspired, and I hope people listening to this podcast are inspired to get involved if they aren't already. I love that earlier you mentioned getting people to act as one of your major goals as a speaker. So what is one thing that people can do right now after listening to this episode to get started on accessibility?
It's a tricky question because it depends on who the person is. You know, that if it's a marketer, I would say start adding image descriptions. Those are so easy to do. Yeah, just write one line. I mean, heck, if you see a picture of a basketball player shooting a ball, just put basketball player shooting. I mean, it's a starting point.
Yeah, it's a way to start, and that's what matters, right?
Right, just start. It can be a very small step. That's the progress of a perfectionist about. If you don't know where to start, ask. There's always someone you can ask. Heck, ask me. Maybe I can point the way for you.
Ooh, I have a question. I have been told that if an image is just decorative, it shouldn't be described. How do you both feel about that? Let's say that there's an educational thing, and there's an image, and then there's some words. I'm curious. That's something that I've always been torn about. I try to describe all my pictures, even if they are considered decorative.
So Sam, what do you think?
The question I always ask people when they're talking about alt text is, what are you trying to communicate? And sometimes if it's a decorative image, the answer is nothing, right? And so if you're not trying to communicate anything specific with the image and you describe it, all you're doing is making another thing that I have to listen to.
Exactly. So it is possible to have an image that's not related to the content, and you're doing it to add color, to add pop, to add, make the page more easy to read, so you're not staring at a whole lot of text on the page. It's possible to do decorative, and I would make sure the web development team has the proper programming for decorative, because it's tricky. It depends on the platform you're using. But when it comes to social media, I have a different answer.
Tell me.
So I posted a photo of me on Facebook and Instagram. I did not add alt text, but that was on purpose. That's why I put in the post. Ignore that. Those are the accessibility text. Because I didn't want people to yell at me for not having an image description. So what happened was they both added automatic, and they were wrong, wrong, wrong. They basically said two people outdoor body of water. That was it. It was one person. It was me in a kayak, obviously on water, with my hand in the air above my head holding my paddle in victory. Isn't that quite a different picture? Did that paint a different picture than two people body of water outdoors?
Blind people are having the same struggles that the deaf community had 4 years ago with automatic captions, and now it's automatic image descriptions. We're doing the same thing. Like, it sometimes feels like we didn't learn anything from the automatic captions, right?
Exactly. So if you leave it blank, it's going to because it's decorative for whatever reason, it's going to add stuff anyway. So you might as well add decorative or something really short so it doesn't waste people's time when they're listening with their screen reader.
Yeah.
If we're just asking personal questions that make us curious, because I think maybe other people struggle with this. So I'll ask you, Meryl, maybe you don't know, but as someone who is blind, I would like to caption my videos and audio, but none of the existing tools are screen reader accessible. Have you heard of anyone working on that problem?
Oh my goodness, I have not. I have not heard about any tool that's screen reader accessible. Hey Sam, have you tried YouTube? I'm curious.
Yeah, and it won't, with my screen reader, it won't let me line the captions up so they show at the right time. I can type in the box, but I can't like change the time code on the caption.
Yeah, the timeline shift where you drag and drop the mouse. Yes, that makes sense now. Thank you. Yeah. And I happened to be captioning a video just before the call. I should have thought of that. Yeah. Yeah. I even caption videos. So
yeah, it's just something that I wish, I don't know, maybe you and I should work together and get some movement, because right now I just have someone else do it, right? And that's not great, or don't do it and feel like I have an excuse, but that's also not good.
I agree. Yeah, Sam, we should talk about this. Maybe I'll do a LinkedIn post. Well, hello, captioning to be accessible. Yeah, even to blind people, they want to create videos and add them, caption themselves, because they don't want automatic caption destroying the hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So we're getting kind of close to the end. And I like to know, like, if people want to continue to follow this conversation, continue to see what you're doing, like, where can people find you? And is there anything you want to promote?
Sure. So the best places to find me are meryl.net, M-E-R-Y-L, my first name, .net, and LinkedIn. And then anyone who wants to work with me can reach me at any of those places. My website has a list of my past and upcoming speaking engagements. I am available to speak on topics related to disability and accessibility awareness. And if you'd like to catch the TEDx talk available with subtitles for English, Spanish, Arabic, Polish, and Portuguese, go to meryl.net/TEDx.
Thank you so much for being here. This was fantastic. I learned a whole lot, and I'm going to try and do one thing to like educate myself a little bit more.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me, Sam and Nikki.
Thanks for taking the time for being here. And I'm looking forward to working together with you some more going forward. It's been too long.
Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan, edited by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber. The theme music is created by F.A. Achman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable, who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram at Disability Bandwidth, or on our website, disabilitybandwidth.com. Thanks for listening.